Hello, Voices from the Bench community. Pat Kuhn from Ivoclar here. Innovation and education are inseparable partners in our profession, where continuous change offers you the opportunity to raise the bar of dental care and elevate what is clinically and technically possible. So we at Ivoclar have created Ivoclar Academy, where we support you through cutting-edge educational programs and resources. We understand that you have busy schedules and individual preferences for learning. To help leverage your time and maximize your learning experience, the Academy has educational opportunities that are easily accessible and fit any learning style. Whether you are looking for an in-person program or for virtual education, Ivoclar Academy offers multi-channel opportunities that allow you to learn at home, in the classroom, in the office, or on the go. In addition, we offer CE-accredited learning opportunities. You can receive a certificate of attendance for each CE-eligible program or training course completed from the Ivoclar Academy. Simply log on to ivoclar.com and click on the Academy link located at the top of the page to get started. Happy learning.
Welcome to Voices from the Bench, a dental laboratory podcast. Send us an email at info@voicesfromthebench.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Greetings and welcome to episode 314 of Voices from the Bench. My name is Elvis.
And my name is Morning Voice.
Morning Voice.
We're doing this on Saturday again. My name's Barbara, y'all, and I'm not awake, but I'm here.
Come on, Barb, wake up.
Drinking coffee.
I get you. Me too. This is April Fool's Day, you know, when this episode comes out, so we can play all sorts of tricks on people today.
Damn. You actually still do that? Is that a thing?
I don't know if people still do that. But a week from today, so April 8th, the solar eclipse happens. I'm sure you're aware.
Not really.
No, do they not talk about it in Florida? Because where I live, we're in what's called a totality.
Right? What's that mean?
So only a certain section, like a stream through the United States, will have the full effect of the eclipse. Meaning complete darkness, and it goes right over Indianapolis.
Ooh, that's cool.
It's not going to happen again until 2044. And they're expecting unbelievable traffic, food shortages, sold out hotels everywhere in our city.
Are you serious?
Yes. I guess people from all over the country are coming to the band of totality to watch this thing.
That is crazy.
Isn't it crazy?
Well, hey, and that makes you special. So good for you.
I'm just going to walk outside and check it out.
Take a picture.
I will try. I don't know. Won't it melt my phone? I don't know how it works.
Or maybe your face.
Or my face.
You need that face. You have a face for radio.
Shut up.
All right. So what's going on this week?
Well, since we're playing episodes from Lab Day Chicago, Barb and I thought it was time to bring back the popular shirts and hoodies that we made for Lab Day Chicago this year.
Elvis, do you know how many people ask me about that damn shirt? This is awesome.
Yeah, almost every week we get either an email or a message asking if the shirts are still available. This was back in January when we sold these things, so they're still looking for them. I love it when people ask me that they know someone that wants to know if the shirts are still available.
Yep, I think I'm one of those people. I'm like, Elvis, come on, can't we relaunch it? Please, please, please.
Yeah, so out of all the shirts that we have done over the years, this has certainly been the most popular.
No doubt.
So out of the weakness of everybody bugging us, we have brought them back just in time for spring.
Nice.
So head over to any of our social media pages or voicesfromthebench.com/shirts for a link to purchase.
All right, now everybody listen up. This sale ends on April 19th, and then you won't be able to get your shirt anymore. So tell everybody you know, just in time for you to have them as you join us in Spain for the ExoCAD Insights meeting on May 9th and 10th. Or, again, we're going to be at the FDLA meeting in Florida. Thank you, Jensen Dental, on June 7th and 8th. So remember, as always, all profits go towards the Foundation for Dental Laboratory, which I believe you're on the board now, right?
I am.
Congrats.
I am. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so remember, shirts, long sleeves, and the hoodies. I know it's getting warmer, but the hoodies are really nice.
And they're really popular. And I wear mine at work, and I gave one to my coworker. So we both wear them.
Nice. So we are back this week with another collection of conversations we got while at Ivoclar's Grand Ballroom at LMT Lab Day Chicago 2024. You know, one of the great things about recording at shows is we get to talk to people that we might never run into because we just don't know about them until the show.
Or we run into them in the bathroom.
I don't know what you do at Lab Day. Or we might get to talk to people we have been wanting to talk to and never had the chance. Or we even get to talk to past guests that come back to update us on the podcast.
That's a lot of ors.
Yeah, but the great thing is this episode has all three. So first up is husband and wife team James and Sandy Kirk.
Love them.
Why they both own the lab, how they met is the real story. You see, she's a dentist from Chile, and they met while on a mission trip. And they talk about how they met, how they named their lab One Dental Lab, her quest to get her dental license in the U.S., and their plans for growth.
Then the technician's dentist stopped by. We have been waiting to talk to Dr. Ed McLaren. Most people know of Dr. Ed McLaren. I know I do because I'm a ceramist. He's been teaching in the industry for a super long time. He's the dentist that spends more time doing technician work than clinical work. He talks about minimal invasive preps, the truth about bonding, why he favors Ivoclar, and all about his epic spoof movies he makes that showcases technicians from around the world. And those are pretty hot. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, they're fun to watch.
I think you geeked out on that part.
A little bit.
A little bit.
And then one of our favorite denturists sits down, Patrick Allen.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you say that.
Well, he deserves the extra oomph. Patrick gives us an update on the Illinois Denturist Association road to becoming legal, and also some of the other states starting on the same path. And then Patrick talks about his practice going digital, bringing more knowledge of the BPS suction denture technique to the U.S., and how Ivoclar is helping him. So join us from the Ivoclar Ballroom at Lab Day Chicago with Sandy and James Kirk, Dr. Ed McLaren, and Patrick Allen. Whether you're looking to elevate your craftsmanship or looking to cut back on cost, look no further.
Vita MFT teeth are the ultimate solution for creating lifelike and stunning smiles.
Crafted with precision and backed by cutting-edge technology, Vita MFT teeth offer unparalleled aesthetics and durability.
And since Vita believes in the power of experiencing excellence firsthand, for a limited time only, they are offering you the chance to get a complimentary case sample.
That's right, a full case, absolutely free. Just visit VitaNorthAmerica.com/free MFT.
Don't wait any longer to start providing your customers a premium tooth at an economy price. Redeem your free case sample, and if you're ready to buy, Vita will even give you an extra 10% off discount by shopping online on their newly launched online store.
Join the Vita family today, and we appreciate your support of the podcast. Voices from the Bench. The Interview. So this is super cool.
Yes.
We're at the Ivoclar Ballroom, Chicago Lab Day 2024.
Which is amazing, by the way.
Amazing. Yep. Ivoclar set us up in a really nice spot.
The best spot, actually.
James and Sandy Kirk came over, introduced themselves, said they'd listen to the podcast. She's a dentist.
Yes.
He's a technician.
Yeah.
And they work together.
Do they? Do you send your work to him?
Well,
We didn't ask that before.
So, yeah, I'm actually an international dentist.
What does that mean?
I'm from Chile.
Okay.
And we met through dentistry. He was actually part of a mission trip, and I was one of the dentists working.
Oh, wow. That's a great story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's back up.
I guess we can back
up. Yeah, let's back up. So, were you a technician before?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. let's start with you. How did you get into being a technician?
I was working for somebody, a dentist I know. He asked me, he's like, hey, I got this position at my practice, and, you know, he thought of me, and I just was a carpenter at that point.
So you use your hands. That's a plus, for sure.
We do a lot of nailing in dentistry.
Hammers.
Yeah. So he just said, why not give you a shot? That's
and
cool.
So I came and checked it out, and it was just one step at a time.
He taught you everything?
Yeah, so I learned a lot through him, and then I took a lot of specialty classes going out and through different companies and learning more all the time.
Yeah. And you got your license in Chile?
I got my license in Chile. I was practicing, and I heard this team of gringos, that's what we would call them, a bunch of Americans.
I love it.
So, I was I just recently graduated, and I just helped out because I can speak English, and English is obviously my first language. So
how did you get involved in the mission? Because I love giving back.
Yeah, it's through my church, and, they had gone there before doing dental missions before, and I was always the doctor hired me, and I was like, when are we going to Chile? When are we going to Chile? And so that's how, we met.
So what does a technician do on a mission trip?
Because
usually they just yank teeth and fillings, right?
I was actually more of like just making sure the equipment was running.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, we didn't have problems or if there was any kind of, just more of like
you
a maintenance.
Casting or making dentures.
I know. I wish that was the case. That would be awesome.
Because it's mostly, on missions, it's mostly, extractions and,
Fillings.
So what? Simple. You guys took a look at each other and fell madly in love?
It kind of happened that way. I'm not going to lie.
Now we got three kids and, our own.
We have a lab.
Our own successful lab.
So you're in Chile and you were in Virginia?
Up. Yeah.
And you moved to Virginia?
Yeah. So, after we kind of had this back and forth online.
Yeah.
We just decided, let's go for it. And we got married shortly after, a year after.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
And you came from Chile all the way to Virginia. What'd you think?
Oh, well, I actually grew up coming to the U.S., so that's why I could learn the language.
Okay.
I was familiarized with Virginia. We had friends.
Nice.
We loved it. Yeah. I mean, I loved it, and now we live there in Virginia, and we love it.
And you went through the boards to get your license
I bet
that was fun.
So what was that process like? Was it hard?
I'd say technically it's all the same. It's just the stress of having to take this one test that you – I promised myself that I would never go through that again because in Chile it's the same. It's just a different language. But I took the leap, I had to do the whole thing.
Wow. Yep. So then you came here, you started a office and then a lab, or did you do a lab and how did that work?
Well, so we started the lab first, This is about 7 years now. And just one step at a time, I kind of transitioned my way out of carpentry into lab slowly.
Did you build the lab?
Yeah.
And with your carpentry skills?
Yeah.
How did you come up with the name, One Dental Lab?
One Dental Lab, I give the name, it's actually God kind of got me into my job. And so he's the one.
I like that.
Just make the tea.
Yeah. So I was it's all to him. Like, my skill comes from him, really. I can't say I got myself into it because it really was him lead me into it.
It's not surprising to hear you say that because you went on a mission. Yeah. That's how you met. So obviously your faith is very meaningful to you. So I love that name. Yeah. That's cool.
Yep.
So, Sandy, did you work in the lab while you're again?
I kind of took over the whole removable side of the lab, which was, it's the one thing that dentists hate because they're
it's
so unpredictable. I sit in my wax room and then the try and it's great and oh my gosh, the final is so different. I'm like, it's actually not.
So you're a technician also, a doctor and a technician? So are you practicing still?
I am right now going to start my residency. So it's a one-year residency. Wild. To be able to practice again. But
good
I'm kind of already in the clinical work because I'm training dentists to actually make removable aspect a lot more easier
and
on them.
And they need it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I had no idea how much we as dentists needed this in the field. So,
what are you doing? You're teaching that? Is that what you said?
Yeah, we kind of partner with these. As we work with them, I show them the best ways to get better results, predictable results.
So as you get clients for the lab, you go to their chair side.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I do a lot of chair side, like pickups for locate when they place implants all on three,
isn't
you know, all how, four or five.
You
whatever.
Know, it's funny how much they can't do that.
Oh, and yeah.
It's like,
yeah. they it's have not, no clue.
No clue. Yeah.
And I'm like,
that's like a majority of my job is picking up locators.
Yeah. Like, isn't that crazy?
I don't know what I'm doing. But okay, let's do it. I didn't go to school for this, but okay.
So is it just the two of you, or do you have a team?
We have
a team.
We got a team, yep.
How many are in the lab?
Well, we got eight.
It's like eight.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's not a small lab.
Yeah.
That's fairly decent.
And we're training
size.
People all the time, and it's hard to find technicians, you know. No doubt. So we just training, trying to train as much and step people along.
Are you upset to lose an employee when she's
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do.
Actually, a very, very valuable one.
Actually, we've recruited another doctor from Chile.
We did. Yeah. One of my good friends
that's
from Chile
genius.
Is coming, and I said, you want to come to the U.S. and just kind of run the removable aspect? And I do more than that, obviously.
Yeah.
But if she can just hang tight to that, I think we'll be.
And then as she gets her board,
sure. Yeah.
You'll bring on another one.
Yeah.
Why not? I'm
it's
all about
darn
it.
Smart, actually. Just keep growing them.
Yeah. So doctor technicians. Yeah.
Yeah.
It works.
What is dentistry like in Chile compared to America? I mean, can you speak on that? Is it about
it's
the same?
Not, it's about the same.
Yeah.
I mean, technology here, obviously, it's way above. And we have all of that, but I'd say probably 30%. Is digital when here we're seeing a lot more than that 30%.
Yeah, sure. At my lab, it's probably 80-90 already
sure,
digital impressions.
Yeah.
It's crazy, digital scans.
Yeah, not surprised.
I find myself just stuck in my digital island, I call it. I'm just
there
all
we're
the
like,
time.
Hey!
So what do you do mostly in the lab?
Mostly design on 3Shape
do
and
you?
Partials, bridges, implant crowns,
service.
Everything.
Full service. It is a full service lab.
Milling, printing.
Is there anything hot you're looking for this weekend? Anything that you guys are checking
out? Yeah, we're
out?
Looking at the equipment and seeing what's new and everything. Yeah, you know, getting our feelers out there. And, you know, for her residency, I'm going to be starting another lab. So we're looking at, like,
kind of branching locations.
And branching off and starting another one.
So you're going to lose her and open up another lab?
Why not?
What are you doing? Bored?
We might as well.
Why not? Yeah.
Wow. Is the other lab going to be closed? Are you moving? I mean.
No. It's staying open.
Yeah. No, it's closed. It's 4 hours away from.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Only four hours.
It's going to be, you're going to like have drivers in between kind of situation.
Yeah. Maybe once or twice a week, do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like that.
Is it that's another
fantastic.
Part of Virginia that you just don't reach and that's the idea or why that location?
Well, it's because of her residency.
Because that's where I'm going to be at. Yeah. It's
okay. That makes sense.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So you
have
no
choice.
You're
going to run that lab during residency?
Yeah.
I'll try my best.
You look like a darn good multitasker.
We
so
do have three kids as well.
What the heck?
We have three very small children.
Yeah.
Where's your residency?
Eastville, Virginia. So
it's
in the Eastern Shore, kind of Virginia Beach area.
What do you have to do? Like, explain what that means to me.
Just work. It's just you're working under someone. So it's a rural, like health clinic, and it'll be NYU. So I'm just kind of there.
And that lasts for 6 months or
a year?
Oh, really? And then.
And then I'll have my
okay.
And
so
then I have to take the Virginia board test to practice. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so it's a whole year. So I can see why you guys would.
Yeah.
Does every dentist have to do this? Or is it because you came from another?
No, there's a lot of ways. There's a lot of internationals there that kind of find their way. You can go to specialty school if you know.
Yeah.
I actually thought of going to pros school because at this point
I was going to say that makes perfect sense.
You would be really good
so
at it.
So that was an option, but the downside is that you actually pay. You got to go to school and pay instead of them paying you because as a resident,
that's a no-brainer, right?
So I'm like, well, I can try this and. My passion is definitely removable. So, and he's got the other side of the lab. So we kind of.
That's exactly what we need, though. Honestly, is more doctors training doctors.
Yes.
Because it's just our weakest link. I feel as doctors don't have a clue about removable. Sorry.
So true.
Except for you.
So true. I mean, I'm a dentist, and I've seen it, and I'm like ashamed of my fellow dentists. I'm like, why? How did this happen?
Yeah. Yep.
What's your plan after the residency? You looking to open up your own practice?
Probably.
One dental office? Is that what you're going
to
call it?
Why not? We'll probably have another
name.
But probably as an associate.
or you know.
Yeah, or start our own kind of.
Yeah. Looking. Which lab are you going to use? You thinking about?
Yeah. Definitely one dental lab.
She better, yeah.
Super.
There's going to be problems if she don't. No, just kidding.
Well, you came by and said you were fans. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank
now
you.
You're going to you. Be like, hear yourself talk about how you met and everything you're doing. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah, it's really cool to meet you both.
Let me guess, every night at dinner, just tooth, tooth, tooth.
Every day.
Probably.
All the time.
Yep.
Our kids know what a central is, what a canine is, what a dental repair means.
Yeah.
Are you grooming new employees with these children?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Future. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That's it. You
they're
have
very
to do
artistic.
That.
Very artistic. They love their...
Their teachers even talk about how skilled they are.
They're like, what do you guys do for a living? And I'm like, oh, let us tell us. Let us tell you about it.
Your kid was drawing a cinch. What is that? It's a tooth. Okay, I got it.
Yeah. Your son said curve of speed? That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So
enjoy
happy
the
you
meeting.
Sat down.
Yes. Yeah. Same here,
we'll
guys.
Talk to you later.
Yes.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks,
you.
Guys. Bye.
You don't mind if I take an occasional sip?
Not at all.
Same.
Not at all.
Sergio. Ed McLaren. Hey, what's up, buddy? How's it going? Well, you know, it's interesting. You know how serendipitous that is right there. I'm meeting with the new dean of LSU April 24th to start a lab school at LSU. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had a full-time program 2 and 3 years. What I'm finding is, as wonderful as that was, I really limited myself. This is good stuff for live stuff. We'll get to it in a second. So I limited myself because the technicians, are, you know, they don't have the socioeconomic means of dentists with their rich parents or whatever. Not all of them. So anyway, I designed a program. It's already designed. It's 2 years, 2 weeks on, 10 weeks off. 2 weeks on, 10 weeks off. And so a lot of lab owners will be willing to send their people, let's say, or maybe a young technician that's got his own little lab or something like that. And the idea is we would not take an absolute beginner. They'd either have to spend 2 years in a community college kind of program or 2 years in the business. So look for that to start. We're going to try and start it in September.
Sweet.
So we'll tell Marco that I'm going to be there, man.
I will see him tomorrow at the ARD.
Okay.
And I'll let him know.
All right. All right.
Good to see you.
All right. Good to see you, buddy. Okay. Take care. Okay. Good. Yeah. All right, thanks. All right, guys
Can
and gals.
Can we get back to us now?
Yeah, yeah, sorry about that.
No, I'm just kidding.
All right.
Are we live or are you taping this?
No,
no
it's
we'll
recorded.
Let you know.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I love live because live, you know, it's like this, but okay.
That's why we love it.
Yeah, yeah. We're a podcast. We don't do things live.
Yeah.
Here we are at Ivoclar Ballroom at Chicago Lab Day 2024, and we have Ed
Finally.
McLaren.
I think we've been wanting to talk to you for at least 2 years.
Oh, my God. I'm in trouble now. I'm probably in trouble now. Yeah. Well, great to be here, guys.
So you're
Thank
basically
you.
the technician's dentist, right? I mean, you fill both of those roles.
Yeah, I just love doing it. I was the type of kid when I did the model airplanes and the little figurines and stuff like that. And so when I had the opportunity, when I actually got out of school, I did my own gold work before I went to Prost because I thought that was cool when gold was popular.
Yeah,
so it was like 40-ish years ago. And then I studied with John Sorensen at UCLA. John's around here somewhere. He's at UW now. And John was one of the very first guys in minimalistic restorations that was a prosthodontist, you know, doing veneers, inlays, and onlays out of Empress in those days.
Interesting.
And that was just so cool for me. And then I had a guy named Wayne Mito, who is the full-time technician, and I just made sure I got the seat next to Wayne. So I said, Wayne, that's cool. So basically, Wayne taught me. And then I learned from people like the Gellers, the Siebers, Klaus Mutertes. And so to me, I mean, that's my favorite part. Honestly, I love doing the ceramics. I just wish it paid as well as cutting little holes in it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Those little holes make a lot of money.
So you were a dentist first?
I was a dentist first. Yes, I'm dyslexic. I started as a dentist, and then now probably 80% of my time I'm doing lab work. 20%.
Wow,
20%,
really?
20%
so
time.
How does that work, though? Who are you doing lab work for?
For me. Okay, for my patients. I see Sweet. Patients one day a week. And then now I occasionally do some lab work for some friends of mine. You know, if it's the right case, the right patient. And the problem with the average general dentist, and I understand it, okay, is even dentists that consider themselves higher end, they'll call me on, you know, Tuesday and says, can I send you the case Wednesday? Can it be here Monday?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to our life.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, exactly. So you know, it's the reality of that. And you know, in the digital space, if you have a good lab, I mean, you could probably turn high-end work around fairly quickly. But I say, no, my standard, if I'm going to do it, is 6 weeks. And some say yes. And then when I tell them how much I'm going to charge for it, I usually don't hear from them, which is fine, okay? Which is fine with me.
So what is the material of choice for veneers? Obviously, you're speaking for Ivoclar.
Yeah,
so
okay, so I mean, I've been known for doing veneers. I was one of the very first guys to do no-prep veneers.
I remember.
And I would say I've done over 10,000 for since 1983. I started my first veneer in 1983, and I kept pretty good records because I was in, you know, I did school universities for 22 years, and now 18 years private practice on and on between university stints. And I know that I did more because I kept pretty good records. I had very low failure rate of feldspathic veneers, but the reality is that the skill set's being lost. And, you know, many of the dentists today, if not most, really don't know how to do bonding at its highest level. One of the things people don't understand about bonding is that clearly bonding's for retention, right? But the number two reason to have a bond is for stress distribution. When you have two things laminated together and you load that system, it's by definition a constant strain system. The material that's the stiffer material... Yep. Typically, the tooth absorbs more of the stress.
Right.
So if you don't have a good bond, the material absorbs more of the stress. And so this is one of the reasons porcelain veneers break. So it's a little bit of a challenge, significant challenge to teach people, okay? But then beyond that, it's like, okay, if you don't have a dentist that really knows occlusion, really knows, and I can pick on dentists because I'm a dentist. You can pick on your own, right?
I'm
a prosthodontist. I can pick on technicians, too, for some of the things they do wrong. So coming back to your question, okay? So I kind of resisted a lot of this stuff for years, digital monolithic ceramics, just because I could do so much with feldspathic.
Oh, yeah.
And then about 2015, I said, you know, the reality is I got to teach this other stuff because my technicians, they couldn't get jobs, you know, let's say.
Yeah.
Some of them could if they had the highest level. So I said, wait a minute, I need to focus a little bit more on monolithics, okay, lithium disilicates, you know, machinable feldspathics, and really see if I can master it. So I've been about 9 years working with it now, and I've got it, I could show you a case, a technician or a dentist a case, and if we were standing patient next to each other, I could do a layered case, and if I really took the time and did a good job and understand what I was doing with layering either EMAX or maybe Empress CAD, okay, Multi, the conversational distance, you could not tell the difference between the two.
Interesting.
Okay?
I'm a ceramist, by the way.
Yeah, okay, great, okay. And so, you know that. I mean, but it takes a little energy. It doesn't just come out of the machine where dentists have lost it and deans of dental schools have lost it, honestly. They think what's going to come out of the machine is done. Well, what comes out of the machine looks like a bad shade guide at that point. And it takes a human to finish it, a human to understand how to center it if it's zirconia, a human to understand how to colorize it. I mean, maybe 20, 30 for years from now, we're going to have AI. Dentists are foaming at the mouth. And I tell them, ladies and gentlemen, if it's that good, then they're not going to need you either, okay? They'll have some robot that's going to prep the teeth, not you. So that was the interest. So I got to tell you today, probably... Oh, God, I would say more than 90% is either EMAX or Empress Aesthetic, or Empress Multi, which is a feldspathic block. Okay. Now, are there other materials just as good? And I said this in my lecture. Sure, there's some other companies' materials out there just as good. But it's an interesting thing happens when you're at this long enough period of time. You know, you'll find Company A is a great material, Company B, Company C, okay? And you try and save 5 or 10 cents.
Yeah,
I get it, okay? But then all of a sudden you find out that if a company doesn't have good support, I mean, if you don't have somebody you can rely on, and since I teach, I need to talk to people that understand what I'm doing. And then, you know, some companies used to teach for, they'll go nameless. 3 weeks later, they got a new CEO. Next year, they got a new this. And so I'm dealing
with... My rep is different every week.
Every week, okay? And so ultimately, that becomes more important. That becomes more important. So one of my reasons I've done a lot of work with Ivoclar, and I don't work for Ivoclar. Okay?
No, we get you. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
but it's this. They're stable. I'm working with George Tyskowski for 40 years now.
Yeah.
Okay, Sashi Salingi, whatever you pronounce his last name.
Yeah, Sashi.
I just call him S2. Okay, for fun. You know, he was at UAB before I was teaching there, so he's been very stable. John Isherwood.
Oh
okay?
Yeah. Yep.
Jeff
him.
Smith. So the people that I'm dealing with, Tom Hill. Okay, they've been there as long as I've been, more than 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
So to me, that has become a more important issue.
Yeah.
That if I'm teaching a course, I'll call up and he said, hey, Sashi, I need some materials at a course. They're there. some other companies that, like, they sell a bunch of crap because I talk to them. I talk about their stuff. I call them up. Well, fill out a piece of paper and send a request and fill out triplicates and fill out a Sunshine Act. And I said, you can do this with your Sunshine, okay?
Up yours.
you know, I mean, it has to be easy. Yeah. You know, in the teaching space, a dentist makes damn good money, and I make great money, but if I'm taking time off to teach, I can't treat patients. Yeah. And I'm doing some research. You make nothing doing research the way I do it. I don't charge for it. So all of that stuff. So I can't waste time dealing with people that aren't reliable.
Yep. So anyway, that's the story.
My practice right now is in Park City, Utah.
I used to be in California.
No, I was there until 2019.
Okay.
So I have a little practice. I do one day. Well, it's a big office, but there's other people in the office. I do one day a week, private patients. Then a couple of days a week, I'm doing lab work for those patients.
How do you select those patients to get such quality lab work? I mean, is it just anyone that signs up to be your patient, or are they selected?
Okay,
or?
So a couple of ways I'll work with the patient. Okay, so I typically do 4 live patient courses a year. So if it's a cool case and I want to do it and they can't afford me, if they're willing to sit for the course. But that's a lot of stress on them, and they have to come at that time, blah, blah, blah. So that's how I get that. And the rest of them
you do it live on stage.
Well, not on stage, but in a training center. Okay.
Filmed,
and people are sitting there doing. I'm prepping the case for Dennis, and I'm cementing the case, and the technicians were doing the case.
Oh, wow!
So it's a pretty intense course with very little sleep for 3 or 4 or 5 days.
But the patient gets it for free.
Yeah, they get it for free.
That's a nice deal.
I used to charge a little bit for that, but I have found that if I charge them 10 cents, then they're complaining about this, and if they're getting it for free, it's not worth it. It's not worth it, okay? So that's how I'll do it. Now, my fee-for-service patient, it's just whatever. Now, in L.A., I had zero problem charging. Well, you know, you always have a little problem.
Well,
your fees are high.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, the people that are referred internally to me, and it's an interesting thing. If some dentist down the street or patient, hey, go see Ed, okay? It's always a problem because they're just there because a friend told them to and like their smile. So when I tell them what they charge, which obviously has to be more than the local people, okay, you know, it's like coronary time, right? I got to resuscitate them when they find out what the fee is. the better, you know, the usually most of my patients that are willing to pay my fee, and it's not exorbitant. I charge half of what I used to charge in L.A., but it's still double what the person down the street charges. If they're referred to me and they're willing to hop on an airplane, they generally go for it.
Okay? Oh, wow.
They're referred from, you know, top sources, right?
Heck yeah.
Educators and universities.
Absolutely.
That type. So
yeah.
That's how the system works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you find it better to restore these patients knowing that you're doing the lab work.
Right.
Because there's no loss of communication or anything.
Exactly. Now, I realize that's not the real world, okay? You know, very few dentists, it's funny how many think they want to try.
Oh, yeah.
And then find out, hey, this is actually very
really
technically
hard.
Demanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you remember Malcolm Caldwell's book, what was it called? Outliers. He says in his book that you need a minimum of 5,000, ideally 10,000 hours to master something. Well, you work roughly 2,000 hours in a year, so it's an absolute minimum of 2.5 years to become a master ceramist, which I think it's 5 years. I think you need about five years to really master your craft.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I don't do it to make money. I mean, I could make a lot more money if I was just a dentist. I'd do it because I love doing it.
No, sure.
And, yeah, you know, listen, what I try and teach dentists, like I said, since I'm all of those things, I said, God, no matter what they charge, within reason, okay, is a great technician will sell dentistry for you. And you know what? You send a patient, let's say, or even virtually today, which is great, you can do all that stuff. Maybe you diagnose 4 veneers. And the technician looks at it and says, you know, it would really be a nicer case if we did 10. And here's why. Not trying to oversell, but if we want to get maximum aesthetics, they just sold 6 veneers for you that you were afraid to talk to the dentist about. Yeah. And then if you try to sell them the 10 veneers, you're overselling them.
Yeah.
Okay? So a great relationship with a high-end technician is phenomenal for a dentist. Now, obviously, you're not going to have an A-list anterior technician do your second molars. So I tell dentists, you need 2 labs, okay? You need a lab that does good work for your posterior teeth. You're happy occlusally. You're happy
drops
fit.
Drops in.
Okay, then you need an artist for your front teeth. So That's the model.
So for all of our listeners that have never seen your movies, how the heck did you get into that?
Oh, God, that's a
funny thing. Was that your brainchild? I'm sure it was.
Okay, so I've made
more than one?
I've done eight movies that would qualify as Hollywood character.
They're sweet. We saw one at the event.
I've only know of one.
Well, no, okay, go to Ed. I have 2 YouTube channels, and I'm still trying to figure this out. One's Edward McLaren. One is Ed McLaren. So on Ed McLaren, my YouTube channel, Ed, okay, you'll see there's about 5 of them there. I typically wait for a couple of years to get a little mileage out of it at one of these meetings, and then I'll put it up there. Now, a couple of them they took down because I was using some Rolling Stones music, and they didn't like that. But anyway, so how it started, about 2000, I started to learn digital like everybody right around then. That was sort of the start of digital cameras. And then, you know, I learned a little bit about After Effects and Photoshop, so I just started using images of my work. And travels and fun stuff, which you see everybody doing now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and I beat everybody to the punch, and it was just so much fun. I was having fun doing that. Okay, so you do that for 4 or 5 years, and that actually kind of got boring. And then somebody says to me, "Hey, Paul, how you doing?" Somebody says,
"See, it's live."
Yeah.
Told you.
Yeah. Somebody says to me, "Hey, Ed, why don't you do something with some people in it?" So I thought, okay, if I was going to do something cool, the first one was in 2008. I thought ceramic. I thought, you know, Star Wars was kind of everywhere. The second round was at 1, 2, and 3
came out in those prequels days.
And I thought, hey, we'll do something called Ceramic Wars. Okay, so that's where it started. Mm-hmm. God, it was $92,000. That was a lot of money because I didn't know any people in Hollywood, so they charged me rack rate. And so anyway, I thought, let's do it in 3D, okay? So we did it in 3D.
You
and it was
filmed it in 3D?
Yeah, that was $7,500 a day to rent the camera in those days, okay? So that's when it was just coming out. So anyway, you know, I had the bad guy was Darth Pulp Killer, you know, and the Pulp Death Star, you know. That was really awesome.
Did you write all these?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Excellent.
I mean, it's not that hard when you have a concept in your mind and you just figure out how you're going to relate it to what you do. And I didn't, you know, obviously I didn't think of Star Wars. So I did Raiders of the Lost Art. The Raiders Lost Ark, okay?
Yeah.
I did what's called The Source with a twist on The Matrix. I've done 3 Star Wars movies, okay? One was Ceramic Wars, Return of the Ceramist.
That
another
was
one
cool.
was Ceramic Wars, The Last Crusade.
Yeah.
And then I did another one. I can't remember the name of it right now. And then I actually wrote a script for a new one called to steal from the new movies called Ceramic Wars, The Last Jedi. Or less ceramics or something like that. Okay.
How the hell do you find the time?
Well, basically, I don't do anything else.
You don't sleep, right?
Yeah, I don't sleep enough, man. I didn't sleep well last night. So, anyway, what happened? You know, that becomes your hobby, right?
Yeah. There's only so much time. You get passionate about
Some dentists play golf 6 hours a week. I make movies, okay? So I don't do any of that stuff. I do teeth, movies, and I work out a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit of my karate. So that's how it all started. And then it's developed its own life, actually, to tell you the truth, where people now are expecting it. And like I'll do a lecture today, the room fills up. You can see there's only 20 people in there now. They watch the movie and they leave. But at least, you know, it's fun.
Got to end with the movie.
Yeah, well, no. Well, actually, that's what I used to do that, but it was too much work to make 2 movies. I'd made an intro and an exit movie. So.
Oh. Yeah, they showed The Ceramists Never Die.
Yeah,
is that the name of it?
Yeah,
DTG. That was cool.
Well, okay, I showed the new version here. Okay, so that was 19 minutes, so that's a little long for me.
It was pretty sexy. I liked it.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I re-edited it to make it like a music video, you know, what's called a super trailer, where you still see the whole story. Okay, but it's bouncing around a little bit. So it played today. I played it today. It was nine minutes and 20 seconds.
Awesome.
So that's what's gone on. So
that's cool. And so you're working on another Star Wars movie?
No, I have a script for a Star Wars movie.
Have you thought about Star Trek?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to ever get to that. You get to a point, man, it's getting they're really expensive.
Yeah.
That sounds like it.
And I'm in my mid-60s, okay? So I put a lot of time and energy into that, okay? And so the next movie I'm going to shoot, it looks like, is going to be called Ceramic Sensei, The Last Karate Kid.
Oh,
so it's going to be a fun twist on the Karate Kid.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
So I was going to call it the Karate Grandfather because I'm actually being the one trained, okay? But I thought, hey, that'd be kind of boring. And then I got another movie in the queue that I was going to shoot a couple years ago and when I was in better shape than I was now, actually, and starving myself to get a little more cut, I wrote a movie called The Dental Expendables.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So I play a Stallone-ish character. Actually, I'm going to call the Dental Expendables the new A-Team. Now, I need tanks for this, and I need attack helicopters. So I have a dentist friend that he can organize those in Russia.
Wow.
And we were going to shoot a couple years ago, but...
That's crazy.
Unfortunately, the world events...
That's big time.
Prevented me from...
Not too easy to go to Russia right now.
No.
That is great. Do people write scripts for you?
No, I write the scripts.
No one's like presented a story to you to try to get you to
do it?
Well,
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, Dennis or Ted will come up, hey, why don't you do this? Hey, why don't
you
do that?
I already pitched Star Trek. So
Well, these are time intensive. I would say that I probably put 1,000 hours, so that'd be 6 months of time into one. And I've done one every 2 years or maybe a little shorter. And so then, you know, on top of that, that takes away from the ability to make money too, right?
Yeah.
And then true. I'm the producer. I'm usually an actor. I've acted in all of them, okay? And so I'm doing all the work.
Yeah.
And then to keep the cost down, and about as cheap as you can make a really high-quality movie is about $50,000. That's as cheap as – and that's where you're doing – you're contacting everybody. You're buying the water bottles. You're getting the sound people. You're doing whatever, okay? And that's paying very minimal for actors. Now, typically, the dentist actors or technician actors in my movies, I don't pay. But I usually have to – if I have to get some extras, they typically rack rate in Hollywood. It's about $300, $350 a day. So I got to find those people, and then I got to find sound people. If I'm overseas, which I do, I've done most of them overseas somewhere, it doesn't make sense to fly my sound people there, okay?
Yeah.
Sure.
Or fly my electrical people, my lighting people. So usually I just find people there. But then that's another challenge, okay? I shot in Egypt about a year and a half ago. And, you know, 9 o'clock to the Egyptian culture means 9, 10, 11. So I got a film crew there. I got my cinematographer who is what's called DP. It's director of photography. And we're waiting for 2 hours. Nobody's there. I'm paying a bunch of people. So, I mean, it's a fun challenge.
Yeah.
It's a fun challenge. So.
But what you put out, it's fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure the industry appreciates.
Oh, heck yeah.
The highlight.
I do.
Of it
in a
fun setting.
Yeah. They love it. So it's interesting. Sometimes when I've lectured some of these more, let's say like American Academy of Aesthetic Dentistry, I'm lecturing at the American Academy of Aesthetic Dentistry in August, okay?
Yep.
And I showed my one before, one of the movies at one of those I lecture at 10, 12 years ago. Then I'm in lecturing at European Academy. So the president of the academy, and I leave names off, he goes, Ed, we're going to let you lecture, but you can't show a movie.
Why?
I've had that before.
Why?
Because these are a bunch of
stuffy
old people, okay, that don't get. So I said to him, I said, but, you know, my movies are related to dentistry, and it helps attract people. His response was, we're a serious group.
Wow.
And I go, okay.
All right.
And I said, you know, you want to tell them, I'm probably going to attract 100 people to your meeting that's going to buy tickets, okay? Because that's really what happens. So I was lecturing at the European Academy of Dentistry almost 10 years ago now, right? And so they told me no movies. So I left a movie out. Okay, so there was 500, 600 people there.
And people wanted them, right?
Well, here's what happens.
Yep.
A bunch of, you know, the young students and stuff that are just fresh in dentist come up, and they said, are you playing a movie? And I said, no, they won't let me play the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't beat anybody up and say, hey. They said, I'm sorry, you can't play the movie. And so those people, about 100 of them, went to the thing, said, listen, we're boycotting the meeting. If
you don't show the movie.
So they come up to me, so what'd you do? Did you do this? I said, I had nothing to do with it, dude. They asked me if I was going to play a movie. I told them the truth.
Yeah,
and they said, why? I said, because you told me not to.
Yeah.
Okay, I respect you. He goes, play the damn movie. He was angry. Okay, so we did.
Won that battle.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Well, I'm not trying
to
win the battle, but, you know, here's the other interesting thing, okay? We started with all this business 40, 50, 60 years ago, lecturing with 35-millimeter slides.
Oh, sure.
With cool information, and people started to learn. Okay, now we're in a completely different space today. We're competing for so much attention of people.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And if you don't have some entertainment value, I don't care if you're talking about the newest thing on earth or the newest thing on earth you might want, but everybody understands in the marketing space today, if you want to capture people's attention, you better make them feel good. You better entertain them a little bit.
Make a Hollywood-style movie.
Yeah, or something cool.
It's
true. You cannot see an ad anywhere today without some attention grabber.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay? And I don't know if you saw it, but I mean, what is there, 40, 50, 60 people in there? When I the room fills up, okay?
Because they want to see the movie.
Yeah, and my material is not that much different than anybody else. It's good material, but they're there. That's the hook. The hook, the movie fills them up, fills the room, and then they stay and listen to the lecture.
Have you ever thought about putting all 5 of your movies together and have an event where we could all sit and watch all of them?
Yeah, we could do that. We can organize that.
I think that would be cool. Because like I said, I only knew of the one. I didn't know you did so many.
I did eight. Done eight.
Yeah. Eight. So, awesome. You put them all together. What is that?
I would love to do that. Kind of like a film festival.
Yeah.
Now, people always ask, if you ever want to submit these to a film festival, here's the problem I ran into, okay? Since I use music from original movies.
And you use their themes and ideas.
Well, the theme is okay. They don't get you for that. But if you use original content, here's where they get you, okay? Now, here's the interesting thing. Michael Eisner, former CEO of Disney, okay? He would sue anybody that had a likeness of Mickey Mouse or anything Disney. And he went after him. He didn't care if it was a daycare center with a bunch of old people. So it finally went to the Supreme Court. Somebody finally challenged him. The Supreme Court came down with a ruling that said, listen, and they called it the parody law. It says as long as you're not degrading the brand, okay, and they're not charging for it.
And you're not claiming to be that brand.
Yeah, and you're not claiming to be that brand. And you're not charging for it, you get a pass. So I checked with an attorney. They can't do anything to me unless I charge for it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So if somebody else is paying to be in the audience, that's nothing to do with me. Okay.
Interesting.
But if I'm not making any money back from it, then I don't run into any legal issues. That doesn't mean they can't try to sue, but they wouldn't.
But you
win.
Haven't, have you?
No, God, I haven't. Nobody even talked to me. Okay.
Okay, that's
because
great.
They don't denigrate anything. So the nice thing is that spreads the word a little bit. The only thing that happened was on YouTube, a couple of the movies got taken down by YouTube because. I don't know, the Rolling Stones complained. And
Even our podcast, we use theme music that I bought, and YouTube still says it's copyrighted. Yeah. And I'm like, whatever.
Right.
I mean,
well, that was the other thing, too. My movie partner, okay, that's fully in Hollywood, and so we started a company together. So he said, well, we can do original scores. If you want to get around it and play it at a film festival, do an original score. And I looked into what that would cost.
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
And you know, the other thing is I'm purposely trying to make a connection to something that people already know. So, you know, the fact that they can hear Indiana Jones movie, the fact that they can hear James Bond movie, that's an attraction. And,
sure.
And my goal is not to make money or do a film festival. My goal is to get people into my lectures.
But movies aren't going to work outside of our industry.
No.
You got to know your audience.
No, you got to know your audience.
Yeah. I would love to see all eight presented somewhere.
Oh, we're going to pull them up. We'll pull up YouTube.
You can see the ones on YouTube.
I want to sit down somewhere with other technicians and watch all eight
have
of them.
Have a party.
Popcorn.
We can do that. Have an intermission. You know,
that's
like
cool.
After three or something like that.
Like as soon as lab day ends, we all go into a ballroom and watch the. I think it would be cool.
Right.
How about we do it here?
My only fear is nobody'd come. Hey, you know, someday Ivy Claire wants to sponsor. That's not a bad thing.
There you go. So. Well, it's out there. They know about it now.
Yeah, they do.
Well, great.
Yeah. Ed McLaren, thank you so much for sitting
down. Thanks, guys.
Down.
Thanks
I
for sitting down.
I appreciate it. Wait, we forgot. What are you talking about here in Ivy Claire?
I showed the movie, and I talked about my digital workflow, but I also talked about some research I did with Ivy Claire Materials on their lithium disilicate and also on their new zirconia prime aesthetics.
Love that.
And then I related it to how I finish, okay, because it's not just the material. It's how I use the material. So I talk from a dentist perspective, what the dentist needed to know about the digital space, okay, that are adaptions, which they really haven't heard. And then the last thing I talked about was what I call the final touch, how I take what comes out of a machine and put the humanistic touches in it that brings it to life. So that was the topic.
The fun part.
The
occlusion, do you stain or polish?
Okay, so here's a big issue about occlusion. I mean, obviously, if you stain, it's microscopically rough.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to colorize and I'm going to glaze the facial of restorations.
Yeah.
Okay, anterior teeth. It's the posterior, and so I don't do the lingual. I just polish. Okay.
Yeah.
For crowns, bicuspid, something like that, where you got a cusp and occlusion, I colorize glaze and I just polish the cusp real well, so the glaze is gone.
Yep.
So wherever I'm gonna have a centric stop, I've polished it exceptionally well.
Interesting.
Okay.
So it's not just that either or.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of both. It's taking advantage of why you would glaze, why you would colorize, but also understanding the dynamics of the occlusal issues with glaze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Interesting.
All right, guys.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We appreciate it. To the weekend.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we got an old-timey guest here who's been on, what, three, four? How many times have you been
on? Oh, 10?
I think three times.
Three times?
Three times, yeah.
I think so. Well, it's great to have
you
back. Patrick Allen, the greatest denturist
ever.
Ever.
Easy now, easy.
Because you know we're denturist fans,
absolutely.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's going
what's
on,
up?
Patrick?
Oh, everything all at once.
Yeah?
No, it never stops, right?
Yeah, sure.
It shouldn't stop, because when you stop, you die.
You don't stop till you get all 50 states, right?
that's where it's going.
Yeah, you got to give us an update.
All right.
What's up?
In my spare time that I've been trying to procure, I've been helping out the Illinois
We love them.
Oh, Mandy and Katie.
Katie. So, they're really making some good inroads. We had a really good reception at the National Denturist Meeting. They made a lot of friends, got a lot of donations. Everyone's really supportive of the cause.
Cool.
we kind of formulated a plan to come here and make some more friends and try to get some more
support. Yeah, they have a booth downstairs.
They have a booth. We just visited it. I gave both hugs and
They look busy.
And so one of the things that we've been really working on is just trying to get some presence and get seen. And we had huge support from some great technicians like Stefan Rohrbach. Table demonstration. Nina, you'll have to pardon me because I can't.
Freakington.
There we go.
No worries.
She's so great.
I only know because I had to practice.
We love it. Yes, many times. And he still does it wrong.
And Dora Rodriguez.
Saw her today.
Yeah, she's amazing.
We had a lot of support, a lot of people who are championing the cause. And helping make this a thing and be seen. So
when you talk about the Illinois, we're probably going to talk to them tomorrow, but like, how much longer do they have to go? Like, what do they have to go through still?
You know, it's funny you ask.
Because I know you know. Well, if you know, you know.
Well, kind of. They have a bill, and we've been in touch with the Illinois Dental Association. And one of the things that we've wanted to do is try to do this as much as we can in partnership. You know, we want to not take anything away from dentists or dentistry. We want to be a partner in this.
Right.
And that is the ideal way to go about it. So the meeting that we had with the Illinois Dental Association, you know, we were very clear, like, there's limitations to a denturist's scope of practice. Sure, we take impressions, we take bite registrations, but we're not cutting rest preps for teeth, for partials.
Right.
You know, we're not altering things. Also, if they have teeth remaining, then, you know, the first thing we do is we refer them out to a dentist for that checkup. You know, we're enforcing... You know, trying to get people to keep the teeth they have. So, trying to help them understand.
Which I love, by the way.
Yeah, we want to enhance dentistry, not take anything away from it. So, we had a good initial meeting, and I think before they go too much more forward with presenting the bill to the legislature, getting on the same page. What we want to make sure of is that we don't have any opposition. The process of pursuing legislation is expensive.
It's daunting.
It is.
It's expensive. It's long. It's rigorous.
There's a lot of elements there. Yeah. And so one of the things that we want to do is we want to try to, if we can, have an ally rather than an opposition. So right now that's kind of where we're at, is trying to get some form of an agreement or acquiescence from them. So.
And there's no better supporter than you, because you've been down that road. And so to have you on their side, to be able to kind of walk them through everything.
That's it.
It's awesome for them.
Any other states in the process?
Yeah. So we've got a gentleman who actually just joined the National Denturist Board, Dario Zuniga.
Okay.
He actually works in-house with a prosthodontist. They totally see the value in having a denturist scope of practice. So same thing, I'm wearing my old NDA shirt that says, what does it say?
Ask me about denture.
I know, that's what I saw when I walked up.
So we went earlier, my daughter, she's with us, and she loves to go to like high tea. So there's a hotel down the street that does like a high tea with little, little cookies. So we went and did that. And then out of the blue, someone comes up and kind of like slaps me on the shoulder. And it's a prosthodontist that works at the school in New York. Mm. And he said, I love what you guys are doing. And so I think there's a lot of old thoughts that dentistry and prosthodontics, we can't work together. We can't appreciate one another. And it's a different time. It's a different place. And, we're seeing, a certain level of acceptance and understanding. And, we just have to continue to make inroads and be seen in a positive light and, take the mantle.
So what are the other states that are working on it?
There is a gal who, she's just started a denturist association in Virginia.
Oh, nice.
Good.
And then there's been a handful of technicians in Michigan that have had some interest. But, it's, again, trying to get a coalition of people that can kind of go through the steps in the process. So that's what we're doing, is just trying to foster that because... As an outsider, it's very difficult to go into a place that isn't your home mm-hmm. and try to talk to legislators and say, oh, this is what we should do. Yeah. You really need a homegrown coalition to be able to execute that. Yeah.
And not only that, but you need a homegrown coalition that's politically minded.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have to be that side of their brain. Not only are they technicians, but you've got to be into politics. You have to know what to do and all of the rules and all of the red tape, and there's a lot to it.
And that's it. So one of the things that a lot of people have said is, why not do a national effort, or, you know, a national bill, if you will? And at the end of the day, every state has its own, you know, rules, regulations, states' rights. If we were to tackle a national initiative, you know, even if it got passed, you may see some, you know, some pushback, and you know. So I think it is something that has to be kind of attempted one state at a time, so it can be you know, built in its own way.
And then you pull people in like you that have been through it, and you can kind of pull all those things together and be able to help advise them.
So no, that's kind of where we're at right now. There's a lot of there's definitely a lot of interest, and it's events like this at Chicago LMT that are going to
catapult it.
Absolutely. We're going to be able to make friends and be able to start to expand the interest and you know,
And I think you are.
Yeah.
Being here especially, you're going to have 5,000-6,000 technicians that are going to walk by that booth tomorrow and check it out and ask about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, there is no better press than that.
Well, that and so, like, one of the other initiatives that I'm working on back home in Maine is getting into high schools and trying to get young people interested.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it is.
Well, one of the things I'm really focusing on too is, because we have such a need also for dental technicians, not everybody wants to go and work direct with the patient, work in the mouth, but there's a lot of people. My sister, who is a denturist, she hasn't given up her license, but she has no desire to practice directly with patients anymore. Yeah. She wants to go into the lab, put her headphones on, and grind and polish on dentures.
There ain't nothing wrong with that.
It takes a certain skill to want to deal with a patient and live and talk to them and all of that. It's not made for everybody, that's for sure.
So, it's one of those things, though. We have such a need. We could, in Maine, we could triple our numbers and still not have enough denturists to fill the need that's there.
That's nuts to me. Yeah. I mean, that's great. But you yourself, in your private practice, you've taken on digital, right?
Yes.
I've been watching.
That's an update.
It is.
Give it up.
So, I think when we initially talked, I was just like dipping my toe in the water.
Wow.
I have fallen in. I'm soaking wet. We're there
and
now.
And you love it?
I for the most part, I do. I figured out a way to kind of embrace the crazy.
That's cool.
But it does. It's absolutely taken our small two-person practice and started to afford us, like, it's probably shaved.
A life?
Yes. Yes.
You
know, to be conservative, it probably saves us somewhere between 20 and 30 hours of labor time a week. You know,
that's huge.
All of our listeners, y'all, that's huge.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Literally.
Scanning and printing dentures and designing on 3Shave?
Yes. Yeah. So back in 2020, we bought an iOS and a desktop. I got a Trios 3 and an E4. And just kind of went along with a lot of the Canadians that I follow. The hardware they were running with.
Yeah.
And so I was like, that's what I'm going to do. That's what everyone else is doing.
Trios is a great scanner.
But for about a year, I didn't really do much with it. We were so busy coming out of COVID. I really didn't have the time to sit down and put my hours in.
Yeah.
But I also didn't quite understand. I didn't have a mentor. So I was kind of just flying blind, and as soon as I hit a roadblock, I was like, turn this thing off.
Let's get an impression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
After about a year, actually, when it came time to renew dongles and pay those fees, I was like, wait a minute. What are we doing? We got $60,000 worth of paperweights. We need to figure out how to put this to work. So I went on kind of an education bender. I traveled here, there, and everywhere.
Yep.
I think we figured out I traveled somewhere over like 100,000 miles to went to Ireland and Canada and Australia.
Oh, that Ireland guy we had on. What was his name?
Paul McNally.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because
– still get his emails.
Yeah. So we did a secondary course for the
– Oh, I remember
suction
that.
Denture.
Yeah.
And he did a larger group. Normally the suction denture course is done with just two candidates at a time because yep. it's so touchy-feely,
yeah,
sensitive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But he did an advanced course for people that had already taken it. And there was, I think, six or eight of us that were there. And we were all – sidebar conversations, we were talking about how we'd all bought digital technology but really weren't putting it to use.
Really?
So he said, well, all right, guys, if we could put on a an introductory level course, would you want to do it? So a year later, we came back, and he brought German Versteeg, who's a Dutch technician denturist. He owns a huge lab. Actually, I think he just sold it in the Netherlands. But I think he had like six or eight PM7s. And yeah, he has a powerhouse place.
That's a lot.
So, but he's been in the game for quite a while. So we brought him in to do a course, kind of get us going. Shortly thereafter, I left Ireland. I did my ASIGA training. Then I went to the Digital Study Club in Kelowna. But before that, I spent a week with Luke LaRoque Walker and Paul Imperius.
Yep.
Wow.
And they really pushed me up. They helped me get over a lot of roadblocks. And that's what you'll find. Well, what I found with digital is one little roadblock could absolutely like show stop you.
And you need figure out how to work around it or go through it.
And as the old saying goes, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
And so there's simple things that I was so close yet so far away.
Yeah.
So they really helped me out a lot. And then I probably within 3 months, we went from just doing immediates and Chromes with the iOS to now I'm designing and doing some reference denture technique and then getting into – all right, how do I mishmash my analog and my digital? So some of the stuff that you hear and you go, oh, yeah, I think that makes sense. Now all of a sudden I go, oh, I get it now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So expand on that, though. How are you mishmashing the analog and the digital? Like, how is that? Like, what are you doing? What's your process?
So every once in a while, like, especially when it comes to, like, the SEMCD process, there are, like, times I'll have issues with being able to draw my borders high enough so I can encapsulate enough of that that peripheral roll, the where it's so thin in certain areas and so thick in other areas, three shape maybe struggles a bit to get the outline that I want. So there's times where I'll actually take and maybe pour a physical model and then scan that and bring that in.
Okay.
So that way I can have the land areas that I want.
Yep.
So that's really important. I can't afford to lose
that. Well, you still got to do bite blocks to establish a vertical. Matter what digital you're doing, you still have to do that stage.
Yep.
You got to do an analog somewhere.
That's it. So, and I can't emphasize enough. So one of the things, too, Joseph Rotonyi, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
He sounds familiar.
So he's a Hungarian technician that I met through, I've seen his stuff online, followed him for years, but Paul McNally brought him in to help out with some of the SEMCD stuff. But he wrote it's called BPS Step by Step. Mm-hmm. And it is all analog. He is not a digital technician at all. He sort of gives you a funny look when you mention it.
Yeah, one of those,
But he's a Gerber-trained technician. He's phenomenal, and his photography is great. But he wrote this book, and it really kind of does a great photo documentary of the BPS and SEMCD.
Which is the suction denture.
It is, So the SEMCD is based off of Ivoclar's BPS.
Okay.
Now, it's not really pushed here in the U.S., I think there's a sort of an attitude that Americans want it fast and cheap. This is a more kind of premium sort of methodology. But if you talk with like Stefan Rohrbach, that's kind of along the line of what he does, very kind of Gerber type of denture philosophy start to finish. So he wrote this book. I wanted a copy, but he said, I can't be shipping this all over the world. So at one point he asked me if I'd help distribute it. And I said, well, maybe, but let me talk with Ivoclar. Let me see what we can do. And the U.S. just... BPS just doesn't have that hold here.
Sure.
So that's one of the things I've actually been doing here is talking with the Ivoclar crowd and
trying to get them to bring the book.
Yeah. Well, I've already brought 100 copies of the book.
Oh.
So that's one thing. We're going to have a website up for people if they want to purchase the book.
Nice.
It's a fantastic book. But talking with the folks at Ivoclar, they are looking at bringing BPS and SEMCD courses and technique to the U.S. Probably at least three times a week, I get a message from doctors, prosthodontists, and technicians. Hey, when is there going to be BPS in the U.S.? Yeah. So there's definitely a hunger for that kind of education. So to that point, I've already started bringing Paul McNally and Peter Anastasia from Australia to the U.S. in Bangor June 14th and 15th. We're going to do a live patient demonstration.
Oh,
and where?
In Bangor, Maine.
Wow. Okay.
I know not the biggest draw, but it's where I live, and I've got the facility for it. So, this is we quickly went from we were going to originally have about 20 people. We were going to do it at the hygiene school. They allow me to use their facility.
Nice. Yeah.
And but as soon as we said that Peter was coming along, because Peter does not only does he a BPS instructor. He's the SEMCD, Dr. Abe instructor, but he also is very digital savvy. He's kind of like he's been in it as long as anybody. I think he owns like the number two PM7. It's either in Australia or the world. I can't
remember.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, he and John Batchelor got into it very early on, probably 7-8 years. So there's not many people that have as much digital acumen, but he does a BPS and SEMCD digital version.
That's what I was going to ask. Can you do it digitally? So
absolutely.
Heck yeah.
And so big thing with digital is the data transfer, right?
Yep.
You know, once you've recorded those impressions, once you've recorded that bite, you don't have to worry about acrylic, changing. You don't have to. Yeah. You don't have to worry about
anything. Nothing's
going to
shift on you.
Correct. Teeth floating, whatever you're processing. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of merit and benefit to that. I went to Australia to train with Peter back in November. I spent the week of Thanksgiving taking his digital BPS course. And then that's how shortly thereafter he said, oh, mate, we ought to do this in the States. So
hell yeah, we do.
Absolutely.
Let's go.
So and he and Paul are good friends. So they're looking forward to the opportunity to try to bring this to North America, and it's going to be a great course.
Sounds like you are. That's for sure.
We're loosely expecting probably 70 to 100 people to attend. Yeah.
Holy schmoly.
Got a ton of interest. It's going to be.
Can Maine handle that many more people?
Yeah. We're gonna like double the population. Yeah. So.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm so excited
for you. We got a lot of projects. My wife and I, and again, all of our spare time, we're looking at doing more Con Ed courses.
Yep.
And everything from, you know, even just doing very basic, denture stuff for, especially for the doctors that are coming out of school that don't have a ton of hands-on.
They don't have any.
They don't have any, yeah.
They don't have any.
So, seriously. You know, this is not just about denturists. It's about providing better denture care.
For the patients.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I heard Robert Cryer say to me once is that, you know, denturists have a role. We could be the denture experts, and especially where it comes to digital technology. It's one of the things I'd implore, you know, all denturists to take a closer look at what digital technology not only can do for you and your practice, what it can do for your patients, but also what it's going to do for us as the digital denture experts.
Yeah, that's great.
That's great advice. Yeah. Seriously.
That's
awesome.
I love everything that you're heading. It sounds great.
Just trying to make this a better place, man.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Thank you for the update.
Yeah, for
sure. Have a great meeting. Good luck with all the bills and all the help that you're giving to everybody.
Yeah.
I wish everybody well.
Yeah, we're gonna do good stuff. Well, yeah. Thank you guys for having me on.
Every time,
absolutely,
man. We love it.
Absolutely.
All right.
Patrick, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Happy Chicago.
Huge thanks to Sandy, James, Dr. McLaren, and Patrick for sitting down with us at the Ivoclar Ballroom. Great, great, great conversations. And you know, you and I both love hearing stories of married couples in dentistry making it work. And it really does sound like James and Sandy have found a really good formula for them, and they are kicking butt. I cannot wait to see where your labs are in a few years. And thanks again, Dr. McLaren, for giving us a little time in what was sure to be an extremely busy lab day for you. Be sure to check out this episode's show notes to check out some of the movies that he's made over the years. They're pretty cool, gotta say. Who knows? Maybe next year there will be a movie night with popcorn, snacks, and we can watch them on the big screen. I think that was your idea, wasn't it, Elvis?
I love the idea. I think it would be fun.
Mm-hmm. And as always, we appreciate Patrick and all the good things he's doing for denturism. I was serious when I said that we support it, and I think it can only bring good things to patients that need dentures and partials.
All right, everybody. Go check out the link for the shirts. Purchase some. It all goes to the foundation. And we will talk to you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
The shirts are back. The shirts are back. The shirts are back. Oh, yeah.
The views and opinions expressed on the Voices from the Bench podcast are those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the host or Voices from the Bench, LLC.